It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in Kodiak, Alaska, where we have 54 degrees under overcast skies. Out at the airport, they are showing 75% humidity, north winds to 3 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. Mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day, high near 58, west winds 5, becoming completely calm this afternoon. Chance of showers this afternoon. For tonight, partly cloudy skies with a low of 45, west winds to 10. And for tomorrow, cloudy skies, high near 57. Rains likely tomorrow afternoon between 1 and 4. Southerly winds to 10 tomorrow morning. Coming up on the Midday Report, rainbow fentanyl is in Kodiak. Kinross, Alaska plans to truck ore from its new mine to its old mine. It's drawing mixed public response. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. More fallout ahead of a potential Friday freight railway strike, Amtrak canceling more trains, saying they have to act now to ensure they don't get stuck. Passenger rail workers are not part of negotiations, but they do use the freight tracks. The consequences of a national freight rail strike would be wide-reaching, as Frank Morris of member station KCUR reports.
Americans are coming to grips with the implications of a freight rail strike. Missed deliveries of chemicals, fuel, and raw material, hobbling water plants, power plants, and factories, produce rotting, new cars gathering dust, and passenger rail service shut down across parts of the country. Work rules are the sticking point. Locomotive engineers and conductors say the railroads keep them tethered to their jobs for weeks on end. A proposal worked out by a board appointed by President Biden would give rail workers a big raise, but not change work rules. Congress could force railroad employees to accept that proposal. Republican lawmakers have already introduced legislation to do just that. From NPR News, I'm Frank Morris in Kansas City.
Should the strike go forward, it would worsen some supply chain snarls. That's a driver of high inflation. Markets are not repeating yesterday's sell-off that saw the Dow plunge more than 1,200 points on disappointing inflation data. Today, the Dow closed up 30 points. As overall inflation is showing signs of entering a more stubborn phase that will likely require more intervention by the Fed. The White House, meantime, says the market is one economic measure, but not the only one. President Biden is in Michigan to highlight the bipartisan infrastructure law passed last year. It included $7.5 billion for electric vehicle charging stations. And today at the Detroit Auto Show, Biden announced that the first round of that funding has been released to 35 states.
The Great American Road Trip is going to be fully electrified. Whether you're driving coast to coast along I-10 or on I-75 here in Michigan, charging stations will be up and easy to find as gas stations are now.
The Justice Department has charged three Iranian nationals in connection with a massive global hacking campaign. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports.
According to an indictment unsealed in New Jersey, the trio began their hacking conspiracy in October of 2020. Their alleged victims in the U.S. include accounting firms, local governments, regional power companies, and a domestic violence shelter in Pennsylvania. Prosecutors say in some instances, the Iranian trio stole data off a computer system, encrypted it, and then demanded ransom to decrypt it. In other instances, they threatened to make public the stolen data unless the victims paid them extortion money. The indictment does not allege that the defendants were working on behalf of the Iranian government. None of the men is in U.S. custody. Officials say all three are believed to be in Iran. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Public health officials and local law enforcement are sounding the alarm over a wave of fentanyl that's recently arrived in Kodiak, including a new form of the opioid called rainbow fentanyl. As KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, it's already contributed to an increase in overdoses on the island.
Amy Butts is a public health nurse and team lead at the Kodiak Public Health Center. She says there's been a worrying trend in local overdoses over the last 3 to 4 weeks.
Kodiak is definitely seeing an increase in overdoses.
The Kodiak Police Department says it has also responded to an increase in calls about overdoses over that same time period, according to the department's public information officer, Francis De La Fuente. De La Fuente says officers have seen a wave of blue pills hit the streets and confirmed that at least one drug bust turned up rainbow fentanyl pills as well. That last part is particularly worrying to Butts. Rainbow fentanyl hasn't been confirmed yet by state officials in Alaska. But just last month, a Drug Enforcement Administration press release said the multicolored fentanyl pills that resemble candy had turned up in nearly 20 states. One pill can contain a deadly amount of the potent synthetic opioid fentanyl, which has Butts on high alert.
They're brightly colored pills, or they can look like chunks of sidewalk chalk. So they can appear as something a kid would want. You know, I have an 11-year-old, and I can just imagine him seeing these little things and thinking they're like Sweet Tarts.
Butts says the ones that have turned up in Kodiak look like pills marked with a letter M. When reached for comment, Alaska State Troopers did not confirm or deny the pills had arrived in Kodiak. Troopers Communications Director Austin McDaniel said via email, quote, "If rainbow or multicolored fentanyl is not already circulating in Alaska, it's just a matter of time until it is," unquote. McDaniel also said that Alaskans should be concerned about all types of fentanyl circulating within the state, a sentiment echoed by Butts and De La Fuente. Alaska's fatality overdose rate spiked over the last year, according to the state's Department of Health, which said fentanyl had driven the trend. De La Fuente said on-duty Kodiak police officers carry the life-saving drug Narcan, which reverses the effects of an overdose. And Butts credits that drug with preventing deaths in the most recent uptick in overdoses on the island, although she says people should still seek out care after an overdose.
It's really important that you call 911 or you go to the nearest emergency room when you use it, because that overdose can kick back in.
Anyone can pick up Narcan from the Kodiak Public Health Center, but says she's also handing out opioid emergency kits, which come with Narcan, fentanyl test strips, and CPR masks, to any interested businesses. Narcan is also available through the Kodiak Island Borough School District. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Kinross, Alaska's plan to truck ore from a new gold mine to its Fort Knox mine near Fairbanks for processing continues to draw a mixed public response. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the mine and ore haul plan were the subject of a Fairbanks City Council work session and resolution Monday.
Kinross has chosen a local company to transport ore from its planned Manh Choh gold mine near Tetlin to the processing mill at the company's Fort Knox mine north of Fairbanks. Kinross, Alaska External Affairs Director Anna Acheson announced the selection of Black Gold Transport during a presentation to the Fairbanks City Council.
It's a new arm of Black Gold Express. Their offices and their whole hub is just right outside of Fairbanks. And this arm is created solely for the purpose of safely and responsibly moving rock on Alaska's public highways.
Acheson described Black Gold as a company focused on local hire that started in the 1980s doing trucking for the oil industry.
And has so many years of experience of driving safely in Alaska's extreme conditions.
Manh Choh ore will be moved year-round along the Alaska, Richardson, and Steese highways from Tetlin to Fort Knox using 95-foot-long double tractor trailers. Manh Choh Project Director Tyler Bruce said the plan is to run 60 80-ton trucks per day.
That's a truck in either direction every 10 to 15 minutes.
Bruce also outlined resulting traffic increases.
The truck percentage increase is about 10% in Fairbanks, and then obviously higher in the Delta and Tok regions because their roads are quite quiet up there.
As far as route specifics, Bruce said Kinross is studying an alternate 3-mile route around the steep, winding Steese Highway climb up Cleary Summit to Fort Knox.
One of our Cleary Summit neighbors proposed a bypass at Skookie Gulch. We've since then completed a land delineation process. We've walked the entire proposed route. And now we're in full engineering mode looking at how we could make that route possible.
Bruce said Kinross is buying new ore hauling trucks that will have 16 axles and 50 tires.
With that many tires, your stress on the road decreases compared to a normal tractor trailer on the road by about 25%.
Bruce also highlighted the new truck's cleaner burning EPA compliant diesel engines, an important consideration given the Fairbanks North Pole area's long running problem with fine particulate pollution.
Independent modeling showing that trucking will contribute less than 0.25% of PM2.5 emissions.
Following the Kinross presentation, a local group formed to oppose the trucking plan laid out its concerns for the city council.
We're not against mining. We're against turning our public highways into haul roads.
Gary Wilkin with Advocates for Safe Alaska Highways described the ore hauling plan as enormous and unprecedented.
248 miles, 13% on urban roads, 77% on rural roads with minimum or no shoulders, no pullouts, a broad variety of vehicles. Subarctic conditions 170 miles south of the Arctic Circle.
Wilkin characterized the trucking plan as a sea change that will increase the development of additional satellite mines feeding the Fort Knox mill.
From projects roughly within a 300-mile radius of Fort Knox, there's the new concept.
Wilkin said that means potential impacts beyond the projected life of the Moncho project.
This is not 4 or 5 years. This is 45 years that we're talking about loading up our highways as haul roads.
A regular city council meeting followed the Moncho work session, and among agenda items was a resolution opposed to the trucking plan, and several members of the public testified for and against it. Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation President and CEO Jomo Stewart urged both sides to refrain from absolutism.
I have concerns regarding the volume of trucking that we're talking about as well. But I look at it and I try to figure out ways to make this proposal work because I look at the paradigm shift and the strategic opportunity and I see something that might be very good for our community in the future.
Stewart urged the council to postpone the Moncho resolution until a State Department of Transportation contracted trucking corridor analysis is completed. The council ultimately voted to put off further consideration of the resolution until its first regular meeting in January. Kinross plans to begin hauling ore from Moncho in mid-2024. Kinross is a supporter of KUAC. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Kenaitse Indian Tribe is working with construction crews in Cooper Landing to excavate and curate artifacts there, which they hope will help safeguard objects that have been buried there for thousands of years. KDLL's Riley Board has the story.
Passing the white tent on the south side of the Sterling Highway, just outside of Cooper Landing, it's hard not to be curious. That tent is the home of an archaeological dig for pre-contact Dena'ina artifacts, which teams have been working on since 2020 as part of a Sterling Highway construction project. Ruby Willoya Williams is the lead cultural coordinator for the Kenaitse Indian Tribe, which means she oversees all of the construction work on the highway. She works with archaeologists from the tribe and a contracting company to make sure when cultural artifacts are uncovered, they're properly documented and preserved.
We have a lot of roots in the Cooper Landing area as Dena'ina Athabaskan people. And to be able to see it again coming up is amazing, and it's really pure. My whole goal in the project is just to make sure that our culture is being understood and respected and honored, because our ancestors deserve that.
The Sterling Highway project Willoya Williams and her team are working on will divert traffic between mileposts 45 and 60 to a new 10-mile stretch of highway, and it passes right through the Skolantnu Archaeological District at the confluence of the Kenai and Russian rivers. The Dena'ina people first arrived in the region more than 1,000 years ago, and at least 4 other Alaska Native cultures inhabited the area for the 5,000 years before that. The Kenaitse tribe has a memorandum of understanding with the Alaska Department of Transportation, which allows them to deploy cultural observers like Willoya Williams to watch over construction at that site. It also allows for the 2 other observers that work under Willoya Williams and a tribal archaeologist.
Pretty amazing to be a part of all of it. You know, you're getting to see a part of your culture uncovered and trying to preserve that knowledge for the next generations that come after us.
Many of the areas that Waloia Williams oversees are called higher sensitivity areas, marked as such because they're known to be sites of cultural resources.
Like house pits or cash pits, summer camps, winter camps, even historical. There's been a lot of historical finds on this highway as well.
When it comes to what exactly the data recovery crews have found, not all of that information is publicly available yet. But Waloia Williams says that one of the most significant finds so far has been a brown slate point arrowhead, which she saw uncovered. During the 2021 construction season, workers found artifacts including elements of Dena'ina homes, like hearth features and cache pits, animal remains, chipped stone flakes, and tools like stone ulus, Alaska Native cutting tools with crescent-shaped blades. Any artifacts that are discovered in the process are sent to the Museum of the North in Fairbanks, where they're recorded, cataloged, and potentially curated.
From a cultural view, that stuff is pretty sacred to me.
Waloia Williams says in addition to pre-contact Dena'ina artifacts, crews are also looking for historical artifacts like cans and bottles, or items that were used as territorial markers. And she says sometimes the most interesting discoveries are what's not found. Some of the sites turn out to be exceptionally clean.
Those are the types of sites where you can tell that these people that lived there before all of us, the pre-contact, really respected their land and their animals. You know, they weren't leaving a bunch of debris behind for everybody to see. These were things that were extremely important to them, so they aren't going to let those artifacts go so easy.
The tribe also handles remains if burial sites are uncovered. The tribe collects the remains and ensures that they are put somewhere other than beneath the highway. Construction for this phase of the Sterling Highway project began in 2020 after decades of discussion. The new highway will include a bridge spanning Juneau Creek Canyon and reconstruction of a 4-mile section of the existing highway where the current archaeological work is taking place. The new highway is expected to open to traffic in 2027. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Organizers hope visitors can take a breath and find peace at a new Japanese community garden and network of trails in Soldotna. KDLL's Sabine Pooks visited those trails during a dedication last week and has this story.
Hundreds of sandhill cranes visit the Kenai Peninsula every spring to nest before flying south for the winter. One crane has found a permanent home in Soldotna. A 6-foot-tall bronze-cast crane sculpture is the new centerpiece of the Kenai Peninsula Peace Crane Garden Trails, a Japanese community garden and set of walking paths tucked in the woods near Soldotna High School. On Thursday, neighbors and longtime proponents of the project huddled beneath umbrellas to celebrate the official opening of the trail system, which has been years in the making. And the crane sculpture at its center, too, has taken time. It seems to watch proudly over the trails from a rotunda at the middle, with its neck defiantly bent back and its wind chime-covered wings outstretched. Anchorage artist Christina Dimitro says she first had the idea for the piece in 1992.
My idea was when I was 19 years old, took 30 years to manifest. 30 years. So some ideas, like sculptures, like a park, like world peace, some ideas take a long time. But it's worth standing in the rain for, right?
So, Dimitro's vision coincided serendipitously with that of Matt and Sarah Bahala. The Kenai residents are the brains behind the project, and they say they were inspired in 2018 after they were gifted seeds from trees that had survived the 1945 bombing of Hiroshima. They say the community Japanese garden is the first of its kind in Alaska, and they want it to be a place for visitors to find peace. That message of peace was echoed emphatically by several spiritual leaders who read prayers and songs at the opening ceremony, including Wanda Reams with the Kenaitse Indian Tribe, Paula Butte with Briat Elohim Jewish Congregation, Deacon Dave Carey with Our Lady of Perpetual Help, and Buddhist Reverend Diane Dunn, who gifted 1,000 origami cranes for the project.
Would you need a
The path to the finished trails and garden has been a long one. Park proponents cycled through several sites before landing on the trail's current home on Marydale Avenue. The nonprofit overseeing the project is under a 20-year land lease with the Kenai Peninsula Borough for that property. Still, some neighbors of the trails were vocal in their opposition to the plans, asking for more public input in the process. Park organizers said they've worked to address those concerns, including a plan for parking at the Solotna Prep building. Last year, organizers got to work building the trails themselves. Matt Pahala says they used a $15,000 grant from the Rasmussen Foundation to do that work.
We have about half a mile of trail with the inner and outer loop combined. That's really high quality. You can see high quality gravel where it should be handicap accessible. And yeah, coming together really nicely.
Hundreds of volunteer hours went into making the plan happen, from clearing trees to laying soil. Pahala says going forward, the Trails Board and Rotary Club of Soldotna will work on upkeep.
10 months ago, this was raw land, and it's become a space that is used often. Every time I'm out here working, I see new faces and a lot of really positive feedback, and really excited for things to come.
Dimitro, the artist, worked with Alaska students on the crane sculpture and the chimes attached to its wings. Through a slot on its chest, the piece welcomes donations and poems. Dimitri says there's already one haiku inside. Support for the project also came in part from the Salamatov Native Association. At the ceremony Thursday, John Ross with the association acknowledged that the park was built on the ancestral lands of the Dena'ina and Sikpiak people.
Hopefully, over the years, this garden can be a place where the history of our people and our stewardship of the land can be honored and recognized. And I want to thank you for being here at this ceremony and for the beautiful event that it is. Thank you.
The trails are open to visitors, but the garden isn't completed yet. Pahala says still to come is an entrance gate and a Japanese torii gate, symbolizing the passing of the mundane to the sacred.
In Soldotna, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Read diverse, read indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Kiyomi O'Connor's book, A Sky of Infinite Blue, A Japanese Immigrant's Search for Home and Self, explores her trying childhood in Japan and her journey as she emigrates to the United States. The book follows her through her travels, falling in love with her future husband, only to lose him after 2.5 decades to cancer, and navigating grief and unresolved trauma. She also discusses how, after many years of struggle and searching, she finally found the love and light that existed within her all along. We spoke with her about this most personal story.
But my husband became extremely ill, and after 3 years of dedicated caregiving, he passed away. So that put me into the devastated, very difficult, agonizing pain. I was lost. A few months after his passing, I began to write. The writing itself brought me truth here and there. I thought that it's just a rubble of our lives. But I found it very difficult, but the truth is there, so I couldn't stop writing. Eventually, writing became my spiritual practice. And then finally, I found myself in the light.
That's Kiyomi O'Connor on her new book, A Sky of Infinite Blue, A Japanese Immigrant's Search for Home and Self, which has just been released. Read diverse, read indie, is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 14th day of September, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:38. It will set again at 8:30. That will give us 12 hours and 52 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 35 degrees set in 1972, and our record high was 73 degrees set in 2018. Currently 54 degrees under overcast skies. Out at the airport, they are showing 75% humidity, north winds to 3 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. Look for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day. And they're talking about a high of 58 with west winds to 5 miles per hour, becoming completely calm this afternoon. Partly cloudy overnight with a low of 45, west winds up to 10 overnight. And for tomorrow, cloudy skies, high near 57, and rain is likely between 2 and 5 p.m. Light and variable winds will turn to the south to 10 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon. Let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 37. Date issued 11 o'clock on September 13th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Sunday, September 18th to 6 p.m. Tuesday, September 20th in the following areas. The Eastside Kodiak District, except for the Inner Ugak and Outer Ugak Bay sections, remain closed. The Outer Aikuluk, Halibut Bay, Sturgeon, and Outer Karluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District and the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. As previously announced, fishermen were reminded that until further notice in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office, and of course most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. On Saturday, September 17th, Canada's Community Health Department is hosting a free 2K walk, 5K run in support of suicide prevention awareness. Walk, run, or simply attend to show your support for those who are grieving and those who are struggling. Together we can make a difference. For more information and to register, visit www.healthykodiak.org or visit the Healthy Kodiak Facebook page. This message is brought to you by Kodiak Area Native Association.
Not quite yet. Looking at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide will be at 5:11 this afternoon here on the east side and be 9 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:38 p.m. of 2/10 of a foot. And our high tide for early tomorrow morning will be at 5:55 a.m. and be a 7-foot tide. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 5:38 this afternoon. That will be a 14.3-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 12:10 a.m. of 2/10 of a foot. And your high tide for tomorrow morning will be at 6:14 a.m. and be 11.7 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory through Thursday. West winds to 25 knots today, seas to 8 feet. For tonight, west wind to 25 knots, decreasing to 15 knots after midnight, seas to 8 feet. And for tomorrow, southwest 15, increasing to 25 in the afternoon, seas to 8 feet, building to 9 feet tomorrow night. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for Thursday. West wind to 20 knots today, seas 7 feet, coming down to 4 feet this afternoon. For tonight, southwest 20, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow, on our west side, south 25, seas 5 feet, building to 10 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for Thursday night, southwest 30, seas to 9 feet. The Planning and Zoning Commission is having a meeting tonight. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Conference Room. Tomorrow, the Borough Assembly will be having a regular meeting. That meeting will happen in the Assembly Chambers at 6:30. The Downtown Kodiak Revitalization Special Committee meeting is scheduled for Friday, September 16th. That meeting will happen at 9:30 a.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. The meeting's open to the public, and agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. The meeting will also be web-streamed from that same site. For additional information, call the city clerk at 907-486-8636. The City Ports and Harbor Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Tuesday, September 20th. That will happen at 12 p.m. in Fisherman's Hall. That meeting is also open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the city website, and it will also be web-streamed from the same site. Call the Harbor Department for information about that at 907-486-8080. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session next Tuesday, and they will be having a regular meeting on Thursday of next week. Both meetings will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held at the Kodiak Public Library. The meetings are open to the public, and public members are encouraged to tune in to KMXT right here at 100.1 FM. Those meetings will also be web-streamed, and the links and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. Please contact the city clerk for more information at 907-486-8636. Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation invites you to their annual meeting. That's this Friday, September 16th. The open house starts at 5:30, and the meeting will be broadcast on KMXT starting at 6:17 p.m. right after the Alaska Fisheries Report. But again, that's next Friday. Open house starts at 5:30 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.